supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, and I know, we all love a good story, and some of the most fascinating ones are conspiracy theories. So, as we can see here in this TED Talk clip from the poet Reeves, you can come up with a conspiracy theory about almost anything.
This is a recent comic strip from the Los Angeles Times. The punchline? On the other hand, I don't have to get up at 4 every single morning to milk my Labrador. This is a recent cover of New York Magazine, Best Hospitals, where doctors say they would go for cancer treatment, birth, strokes, heart disease, hip replacements. 4 a.m. emergencies. And this is a song medley I put together.
It's 4 in the morning, the end of December.
Well, it's 4 in the morning, by the sound of the
Do you ever notice that 4 in the morning has become some sort of meme or shorthand? It means something like, you are awake at the worst possible hour. A time for inconveniences, mishaps, yearnings. A time for plotting to whack the chief of police, like in this classic scene from The Godfather. Coppola's script describes these guys exhausted in shirt sleeves. It is 4 in the morning. A time for even grimmer stuff than that, like autopsies and embalmings in Isabel Allende's The House of the Spirits. After the breathtaking green-haired Rosa is murdered, the doctors preserve her with unguents and mortician's paste. They worked until 4 o'clock in the morning. A time for even grimmer stuff than that, like in last April's New Yorker magazine. This short fiction piece by Martin Amis starts out, on September 11, 2001, he opened his eyes at 4 a.m. in Portland, Maine, and Muhammad Atta's last day began for a time that I find to be the most placid and uneventful hour of the day. 4 in the morning sure gets an awful lot of bad press.
That's the poet Reeves. He's got a conspiracy theory about 4 in the morning, no doubt. Conspiracy theories are often full of intrigue and difficult to debunk. You know them. The elaborate murder plots, clandestine government plans, and schemes behind big political, cultural, and historic events. Some of the most popular ones involve JFK, 9/11, Apollo moon landing, and recently there's conspiracy theories around the internet, around the devastating Sandy Hook school shooting. Polls show that 20 to 60% of us believe there's some truth in them. Some see them as simply engaging, if not ridiculous, explanations that help us make sense of distressing events and circumstances. Well, on today's show, we'll talk about this conspiracy theory mentality. Who's likely to hatch them? Why these stories are so prevalent and alluring. My guests are Derek Arnold and Michael J. Wood. Derek is a communication faculty expert with an expertise in conspiracy theories at Villanova. He joins me in the studio. Derek, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
You're not an expert in Villanova's conspiracy theories. It's a little confusing here.
I couldn't tell you if I was. I wouldn't be allowed to.
All right. So we got that down. I'm also joined by Michael Wood, who's a postgraduate researcher in the School of Psychology at the University of Kent. He looks at how conspiracy theories differ psychologically from conventional explanations for events. He joins us by phone. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Dan. Good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Our number is 888-477-9499. It's about conspiracy theories. So, Michael, like I said in the intro, it's really an attempt to explain an event as being a result of an alleged plot by a covert group or organization. So the most compelling in my lifetime was JFK's assassination. The event was so big, it was life-altering for a nation. I guess a simple explanation by one man wasn't very satisfying.
Yeah, that's very true. In fact, there's been some research into this that suggests that one of the reasons why conspiracy theories come up around events like this more than other events is that people see it as sort of incongruous, you know, that it doesn't work out that such a large event can be caused by something small like one guy with a gun, or for Princess Diana being killed by a drunk driver seems kind of like an anticlimax, considering that she was a princess. So it's the idea that there have to be big causes for big events. That's something that there's been a lot of psychological research into, definitely.
Why can't we tolerate the fact that it's a simple explanation for a major event?
Well, this is still being debated. One possible idea that people have come up with for this tendency to need to believe that big events have to have big causes is that people like to think that the world is a place that's sort of governed in a way that allows some kind of certainty. People don't like to be uncertain. It's a psychologically unpleasant state to be in a state of uncertainty. And people don't like to think that the world is a random place where small things can have large effects, like the butterfly effect is a classic metaphor that people use to describe this. So if something happens that makes the world look like a random and capricious and unjust place, then that's, so the reasoning goes, why conspiracy theories tend to arise around, these big events. Of course, the other explanation is that they actually are conspiracies, but, being a psychologist, that's not something that I really investigate.
Well, the bumper sticker I saw was, just because you're paranoid, that doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Derek, we had this football game last night, and the lights went out in the middle of the game. So how long do you think it took for conspiracy theories to spring up?
For me, it was about a minute and a half. My friends on Facebook started posting that it was something by the commissioner to cool off the Ravens and let the 49ers get some momentum back into the game, which apparently happened.
It worked, yeah. It worked. So at its extremes, conspiracy theories can sound pretty paranoid. So what's the difference between outright paranoia and a conspiracy theory?
To some extent, I think it's partly because of how people treat the conspiracy theory as something that benefits them. I think somebody once said that paranoia is the only sense of community that is left to us. That people are able to take that as a way to bind with others and to have, groups of people, especially nowadays when they see other people on websites or again, social media agreeing with them that, yeah, that was strange that the power went out last night and I wonder why it happened. And you get humor as part of this, but you also get, I think, in addition to that, people are more, I think, just automatically go there. As, here's something that, again, like Michael said, it's a big event. It's something that you don't have any control over. If something like that happened, how could that happen and not anybody have planned for it or known about it? So the only answer that I think suits them is that somebody did, and so therefore it was an actual thing that was done on purpose.
Michael, the show is titled The Conspiracy Theory Mentality. So what is the mentality of someone who creates or is attracted to conspiracy theories?
Well, this is something that I've actually done some research into myself, and there's a lot of psychologists who've tried to determine what the difference is between somebody who believes in a lot of conspiracy theories and somebody who doesn't. One of the most consistent things is that people who believe a couple of conspiracy theories tend to believe a lot of conspiracy theories. They really fit together, and it's looking more and more like conspiracy theories can sort of become a worldview in themselves, almost like a political orientation. So you can describe somebody's worldview by saying that, you know, they think that the world is a place that's more or less governed by a lot of conspiracies, and people who tend to hold that worldview tend to have certain beliefs about the world. They tend to be very mistrustful of authority, to be disagreeable, to be open to experience, although there's some conflicting research on that. They tend to feel alienated from society. So it's this sort of cluster of traits that seem to be people who don't really like authority and tend to feel like society doesn't really include them, for better or worse.
I might have misunderstood something you said, Michael. You said this group of people tends to be open to experience?
Yeah, that's actually a finding that's come out, where people who are very conventional in their thinking and don't tend to seek out new experiences and new knowledge and things like that tend to pretty much just believe whatever the official or conventional explanation for some event is. People who are more open to experience are more likely to go out and, you know, look at things and look at alternative explanations for events and sort of make up their own mind. So they end up exposing themselves to a lot of these conspiracy theories, and that's one of the big factors in whether somebody believes one of these conspiracy theories is whether they've heard of them, and if so, how much.
It's interesting. Let's go to the phones, gentlemen. We've got Dave on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How about you?
I'm just ducky. Thanks for having me on. I just was listening to this, and it reminded me of a conversation that I had read one time, and I don't remember the participants, but a woman, a prominent woman, was asked, "You don't believe in conspiracy theories, do you?" And she responded, "Why, of course, my dear. That's the only way anything ever gets done."
So I want to hear, sounds like Michael had the reaction of that. Is it true? Do things get done? Are they more likely to get done if you believe in a conspiracy?
Oh, well, I was interpreting that as being more like conspiracies are the only way that anything gets done, rather than conspiracy theories. As in, people believe that conspiracies are more competent than individuals. This is one of the reasons why reasons people have put forward for the JFK assassination spawning so many conspiracy theories is because people don't believe that Oswald could have pulled it off on his own. And, you know, it must have been a conspiracy because, you know, Oswald was so successful. And this, the same thing sort of comes to mind for like the Sandy Hook shooting. People were always talking about that there was a second shooter or a CIA handler or any number of things. So this is one of the explanations for the big cause, big effect line of reasoning.
Well, I want to come back to the Sandy Hook thing. There's one conspiracy theory is that the government was staging this or faking this so that they could push their gun control agenda and eliminate the Second Amendment. But a lot of conspiracy theories are about governments, and the problem is all governments can be conspiratorials and do things they don't want their citizens to know about. I mean, think about the Tuskegee syphilis experiment conducted on 600 impoverished African Americans. That didn't end until 1972. And speaking of that year, think Watergate. I mean, governments do engage in conspiracies, Derek?
Yeah, absolutely. There's been a number of studies that have looked at not just the Tuskegee case, but how that has affected, at this point, generations of, say, African Americans or other people since then. And now that there is more of a distrust toward the government, and in some cases there have been, that has carried over to studies about how people feel about AIDS. People, and one study was shown that the African Americans in rural Alabama said that over half of them said that they thought the government was withholding information about AIDS. 70% thought that the government was withholding a cure for AIDS from these people, and that they thought it was a man-made virus, over half the people in this particular study.
Well, here you're talking about an impoverished community that has been down and out for many generations. Mm-hmm. And you know, our conspiracy theories really about helplessness and hopelessness. I mean, is that also a birthplace for conspiracy theories? Let me t- pass that over to you, Michael.
Yeah, there's actually been some fairly amazing research on how feelings of control contribute to conspiracy theories. There was one that was done back in 2008 where they had they got people and they split them into two groups and they had them both write these essays. One group had to write an essay about a time in their lives when they didn't have control over events, and the other group just had to write about something, you know, fairly neutral. And this was done to induce feelings of lacking control, and they found that the group that wrote the essay where they, you know, didn't have control in their lives actually believed a lot more conspiracy theories when they were tested immediately after. Not only that, they'd see more patterns and random noise, you know, things like the face on Mars. They'd see, you know, faces and objects in random snowy patterns. So it's quite an amazing effect. When people feel like they've lost control over their lives or over events, they tend to believe in more conspiracy theories very reliably.
Hmm. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the conspiracy theory mentality, how they get hatched, why, by whom, and who's more likely to believe conspiracy theories. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. Tell us about conspiracy theories that you've believed. Tell me about your feelings about conspiracy theories or a loved one that gets involved in them. 888-477-9499. I want to turn to you, Derek. There have always been conspiracy theories as long as, I guess, we've been humans since recorded history. I mean, witch hunts come to mind more recently, McCarthyism, conspiracy theories about communism. I'm sure they go way, way back before that. So if they've been around forever, there must be some reason, a part of our brain to be fearful of other.
There definitely has been. I think, you know, part of, and one of the things that got me interested in this to begin with is the idea of there's a story, you know, like you started off, everybody loves a good story. And part of it is, again, that idea of lack of control, that people want to kind of say that there's something I don't have control with, but I'm hoping that somebody at least, you know, they can be bad guys, but they've got their act together somehow with the conspiracy. And it all folds into kind of this narrative. And part of that is you know, three or four things of that narrative is definitely an idea of distrust. And that there's not a place where they can find the answers. And I think that also adds into an idea of infiltration, especially with our government. I mean, you get people who, there's the Constitution. If you don't like what people are doing, you can get rid of them. But at the same time, with the conspiracy theory, it almost seems to resist that idea that you can change things, which is kind of interesting, I think, in itself.
Hmm. You're listening to Voices in the Family here on WHYY-FM. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're talking about conspiracy theories, a topic you are rarely going to hear on any other station dealt with in a thoughtful way. And the reason I say that is because our winter pledge drive is in full swing. And I know you appreciate what we do in Voices, and you know that I appreciate what you do as listeners. And, you know, we love developing new programs that are useful in your life. We love developing programs that you tell us you're interested in. So we have a relationship, and I feel it, and I believe many of you do. So now I want to ask you a favor. Will you please help us and become a member or renew your membership today? Join the family. Just call 888-345-9499. Again, that's 888-345-9499. Join the family. And now I'm going to hand it over to Jennifer Lynn and Mike and Scott, the people who do more than anybody to help make this show as good as it is.
Aw, Aw, thank you, Dan. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Dan. Jennifer Lynn, I produce Voices in the Family here with Mike and Scott, our executive producer, and oh, so much more. Mike and does so many things I admire. And here we are, WHYY. It is our winter membership campaign. And in the driver's seat to help us out this afternoon, taking your calls, we have volunteers from HealthLink Medical Center. Hey! Why are they clapping? Their hands should be typing and busy. Please give us a call right now. Help us out. We only have an hour here, folks. 1-888-345-9499. Really want to hear those phones ring. Thank you so much. And you know what's fueling our volunteers this afternoon? The Pop Shop from Collingswood, providing snacks and lunch today. Again, 1-888-345-9499.
It's a true community effort when we do these membership campaigns. We have a lot of people who join us in person to help us out, give us their time. We have other people who give us goods, such as food, to keep everybody happy here. And also we have people like you, like this person who is just calling in now, who says, okay, I can't be there in person. I'm not going to send hoagies today, but I'm going to make a call. I want to support WHYY. I want to support Voices in the Family, and therefore I'm going to get on the phone. And Voices in the Family is such a unique program that you really will not hear anywhere else. You will not hear the kind of mindful conversation that is done on this program and the insights that Dan has to offer that come from his life and also from years and decades of practice as a therapist. And I really think he is such a treasure, and people always tell me how much they love Dan and they support and they appreciate his insights. So right now is a good time to show that you want to support this program. 1-888-345-9499, online at whyy.org.
Well, Mikan, you stole all of my rhetoric here. Not rhetoric, really, but I want to march down some of the topics we have gone through in the last 6 months. Hypocrisy, autumn years of our life, habits, life transitions, sports psychology, self-compassion. Now, Marty can do that show. Terry Gross can do that show. You know, the garden guy could do that show, but Dan does that show in a different way, and we know that on Monday you park yourself here. It's a punctuation point in your week. Dan is a psychologist. He brings in a different kind of conversation, a different kind of expertise that we have loved for over 30 years.
Over 30 years, that is hard to believe that this show has been, you know, around with us for such a long time. Again, if you want to help us keep it strong and keep it going, the phone is in your hands, so to speak. Make that call at 1-888-345-9499. Again, that's 1-888-345-9499, online at whyy.org. You should be the next person to call to let us know that this kind of program speaks to you. And thank you for that.
Supporting WHYY, the Garrett and Tatiana Copeland Arrhythmia Center at ChristianaCare offers care for people who experience irregular heartbeat, also known as arrhythmia. For those with a racing heart or one that beats too slowly, who have had problems with their heartbeat or have fainted, an arrhythmia assessment may be needed. ChristianaCare encourages people with these symptoms to talk to a doctor. For more information or to make an appointment, 800-693-CARE or ChristianaCare.org/arrhythmia.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
And we are back on Voices in the Family. We are talking about conspiracy theories that we have known, loved, or been involved with. My guests are Derek Arnold. He's a professor of communication at Villanova. He is a faculty expert on the topic of conspiracy theories. Michael Woods, a postgraduate researcher in the School of Psychology at the University of Kent, and he looks at how conspiracy theories differ psychologically from conventional explanations of events. We would love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888 877-977-9499. Michael, I've got to tell you, just between you and me, I listened to you the first half of the show. I'm kind of disappointed. You know, you don't have that really cool accent.
Yeah. I'm actually an invader. I am not from Kent. I am actually Canadian. So I, you know, hopped on a plane and flew over here to spread my malign influence.
So how did you get interested in conspiracy theories?
You know, I've always been really interested in conspiracy theories. I'm, you know, a pretty skeptical guy generally about conspiracy theories, but I just find them so interesting. You know, when I was young, I used to watch The X-Files constantly and just, you know, huddle in terror because I thought that aliens were coming to abduct me. So it's always been kind of a lifelong fascination for me. I used to spend tons of time on the internet arguing with people about conspiracy theories, you know, going back and forth. And, you know, people said it was pointless, but look where it got me.
Let's go right to the lines. We've got Ellen waiting to join the conversation. Hi, Ellen.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I wondered what correlation, if any, there might be between prejudice and people who are prejudiced against others and their believing in conspiracy theories.
So can I ask you a question before I turn to our experts? So.
Sure.
So what created that question in you?
I think prejudice stems from ignorance and sometimes the feeling of powerlessness. And as you were talking, the conversation mentioned that people who believe in conspiracies frequently believe that they, and sometimes it's true, are not in control of the situation and do not have power to affect the situation.
I see Derek here in the studio nodding his head. Thanks for your call, Ellen. You bring up a great point. Derek?
Oh, absolutely. I think especially when you look at the history, I guess, of conspiracy theories, and they go back, obviously, hundreds of years, there has always been, I think, people and groups who have been skeptical of other groups. And certainly when you look at people such as groups such as, say, the Freemasons. You look at people who, many conspiracy theories look like Jewish people, that yes, there is a place, I think, sadly, to some extent, about how it is that people see others as the cause of, you know, in part why it is that they don't have the control that they think they should have, or why they don't have the answers or the truth. And that these are things, again, if you find other people who are also prejudiced, especially against some of these groups, that I do think that it's a natural fit for conspiracy theories to follow.
On the other hand, Michael, it's good to be a little skeptical and mistrustful, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a tendency that everybody has to some extent. You know, we wouldn't get far in life if we were never suspicious of other people, or if we never looked out for people to be, you know, sneaky and, you know, underhanded around us. One of the possible explanations for why people vary so much, why some people are into so many conspiracy theories and why some people don't believe any of them, is the idea that this is something that people naturally vary on, of just how suspicious they are of other people. People tend to weigh different kinds of errors differently. So if you have, if there's somebody who you think is maybe conspiring against you, or there's maybe a conspiracy going on, there's two kinds of errors that you can make with that. You can either accuse them of conspiring against you and be wrong, or you can think that they're not conspiring against you and be wrong. And I think a lot of what governs where somebody is in terms of how much they believe conspiracy theories is sort of rests on what kind of mistake they think is a worse one to make. Do you want to miss somebody conspiring against you, or do you want to falsely accuse somebody of conspiring against you? Which of those is worse? And I think that varies between people quite a lot.
That's really interesting. That's really an interesting dichotomy. Let's go back to the phones. By the way, our number is 888-477-9499. We've got a couple of lines open, and we're talking about conspiracy theories. Let's chat with Christopher. Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. I'm currently studying psychology at Drexel, and I was just wondering, I'm listening to this with my roommates, we're wondering if if there's any way that you can, like, analyze this from a... Will this evolve into an actual disorder? Do people who believe in conspiracy theories, do they become, like, schizophrenic or paranoid? And if so, what actions can we take?
Michael?
Well, there's been some investigation into this. I mean, it used to be that back in the 1960s, you know, the bad old days when psychology was still kind of finding its footing, everyone sort of assumed that conspiracy theories were because of paranoia, and it was all just, you know, clinical paranoia, and everybody was kind of schizophrenic. And, you know, in the decades since then, we found out that this isn't really true, that a lot of people who are perfectly mentally healthy believe conspiracy theories. But one thing that has come up in the last 10 or so years is a personality trait called schizotypy, which is a bit like if somebody's really schizotypal, then that means that they just have sort of lead a really weird life where they have tons of unusual experiences and they see things and they feel weird and their body does all sorts of, you know, crazy stuff in their minds. And it's been found that the more schizotypal somebody is, the more conspiracy theories they believe, and vice versa. But usually this doesn't cause, you know, significant problems for people in their everyday life. So it's not really appropriate to label it a disorder in the vast majority of people who have some degree of schizotypy. And in fact, this might be linked with the suspicion and the two types of errors that I was talking about earlier.
It's Christopher, it is so imperfect, this labeling system we have. And it's not to be trusted too much. Often labels are a way to make us professionals feel better about what we're doing. For example, you know, some of the people who have committed these mass shootings don't have a technical diagnosis. And, you know, you take this horrible hostage situation in Alabama. Now, here's a guy who's a conspiracy theorist. We don't know if he'd have a label of mental illness. My guess is he might have this schizotypal personality that Michael was talking about, or he could be paranoid. We don't know. But there's a chance he wouldn't even have a label here. So, you know, these labels are so imperfect, and often they don't give us the guidance we need. Christopher, thanks so much for your call. Good luck with your studies.
Thank you.
You're in a fabulous program there at Drexel.
I agree.
Yeah, it really is a great program. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're talking about conspiracy theories with two really smart guys who study this and are pretty eloquent, Derek Arnold and Michael Wood. Well, this is Voices in the Family here on WHYY, and I'm going to give you another number now, and I'm going to ask you to please call it to show your support for us, for the work we do, and for the benefits you may get from this show. That number is 888-345-9499. It's our winter pledge drive. It's a very important time for us. We need to be able to keep this program healthy and alive and flourishing like we do with WHYY in general, and we can only do it with your support and your commitment. So please take a moment right now and show us how much you value what we do, either by phone at 888-345-949, or you can do it online at whyy.org. I'm going to hand the phone over now to our executive producer, Mike and Scott, and Jennifer Lynn, our producers, both dear, dear friends of mine.
Thank you, Dan. I feel like a dear friend of yours and vice versa. And it's really been a great relationship with you the past couple of years producing Voices in the Family and working with our executive producer, Mike and Scott. I mean, we do so much wonderful work together. I'm not afraid to say that. I don't even think it's bragging. It's just what we do because we want to do it for you, the listener. We care that much about you, the listener, to care about our product, to put out something very valuable, very intimate, very intelligent, very important every single week, as well as we can. Please show that you care equally back and appreciate what we're doing by calling 1 888 1-800-345-9499 or on the web at whyy.org.
And we had quite a few people who called earlier during our first break, so we're hoping that we can replicate that kind of success now. We have a wonderful group of volunteers. They are from HealthLink Medical Center, and they provide free medical and dental care to working uninsured adults living in Bucks and Montgomery counties. So they do very important work each and every day. And today they have chosen to come here to WHYY to support, I guess, what they believe is important work that we do. So this is the kind of relationship we have with our community. We appreciate each other. We help each other out. We do for each other. And right now we're asking you to do for us by making a pledge to WHYY. You rely on this kind of program to provide you with information, with insights that you use in your everyday life. And you get them at WHYY. It's a quieter, more caring kind of conversation that we don't find anywhere else. It is a truly unique product, and it can only live and be nurtured when people like you show us that they care. I'm asking you right now to pick up the phone or to go online and to become a member of WHYY, to renew, to maybe sign up a friend, whatever it takes, at 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org.
Mike, and I hear you, but I think our microphones are not working this afternoon because I heard two tiny little minuscule phone calls, but thank you for that. I want to hear a flurry. I would like to see every volunteer here busy, busy, busy. Come on, they came out and they're giving their afternoon. We're putting on this wonderful show too. Great topic today, conspiracy theory mentality. I think there's a conspiracy theory somehow interfering with the phone system.
That's right. Somebody shut down the phone system.
1-888-345-9499. Give us a call. Help us out. You've been with us for so long. You never sit idly by. You have again and again come through for us at 1-888-345-9499. We appreciate your support, and we can't do what we do without it. Thank you so much.
Let's try to get the phones ringing at 1-888-345-9499. And this is the show Voices in the Family, and this is probably the only chance you'll have during this membership drive campaign to show your support for Voices in the Family. So right now is the moment. Now is the time. I want to thank also the people at the Pop Shop in Collingswood, New Jersey, for providing us a wonderful lunch today. Everybody looks pretty happy and well-fed, and it was delicious, and we thank you for that. I would like to thank you next for your call to Voices in the Family at 1-888-345-9499. Think about the insights and the kind of wisdom, the quiet wisdom, the humor that Dan brings into your life, and how much you appreciate that.
Thank you.
There we go, Jennifer. See? 1-888-345-9499 online at whyy.org. We're going to go back to the show, but please become a member of the station. And thank you.
Is your child struggling in school? Supporting WHYY, Delaware Valley Friends, a Quaker College preparatory school in Paoli for students who learn differently. Delaware Valley Friends is committed to providing small classes, individual attention, state-of-the-art technology, and an accredited curriculum and faculty for grades 6 through 12. Open house on Wednesday morning, February 6th from 9 to 11 a.m. More information about Delaware Valley Friends at dvfs.org. Registration now open for summer reading and writing program.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Hey, to those of you who called in and joined the family at 888-345-9499, I want to thank you. I really, really appreciate your calls. We're talking about conspiracy theories today with Derek Arnold from Villanova University, Michael Wood, postgraduate researcher at the University of Kent. Derek, in 2009, Justin Fox of Time magazine wrote that most good investigative reporters are conspiracy theorists. And some turn out to be true. And I just, nothing personal to all my friends at Newsworks here at WHYY, but it makes sense. Investigative reporters are conspiracy theorists.
They have to, I think, at some sense, distrust almost everything that's told to them. Even if it's the truth, they have to almost then wonder, well, why am I being told this and not something in addition to that? And I think that's part of the drive. I think that is something that you've seen in the media as far as shows, TV shows and movies and stuff go, as far as how that's that stereotype. But there's absolutely almost got to be a built-in sense of not total trust, at least.
So conspiracy theories are kind of what drives many TV shows. Yes, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, conspiracy theories make a really good story, and people love hearing about them. It's a fact.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Albert on the line. Hi, Albert.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to find out if it is possible for this, the origin of the conspiracy theory itself could date back to like the Tudor era, where communications weren't like we have today, and couldn't they have been these theories been brought through each generation in a way as ingrained as like customs for different people?
That's really interesting. I love that question. Thanks, Albert. Let's go to our guests. First of all, let's start with you, Derek. Do you know the origin? Is there any documented first or ideas?
I think to some extent there's a blending that goes with, you know, what counts as a conspiracy itself and what are just some events that we just don't know. At the end of the world, you know, kind of conspiracy in itself is something that's been around for hundreds at least of years that we can at least document. When you're looking at, I think, what counts as a real conspiracy as far as, again, looking at certain groups and perhaps how they may have interests different than, say, the regular public, that goes back probably at least to about the 1700s, I would say. You're looking at the beginning of groups like the Freemasons. You're looking at kind of this, I think, progression of knowledge in Europe and in Asia, and the groups that I think share that coming together and interacting in ways. And I think, again, going back to the previous question about there's a little bit of a tendency not to trust other groups. I think there's a combination of all that stuff working together, probably since, like, let's say, like about 1720, 1740s.
You've mentioned the Freemasons a couple of times, Derek, and I think of that comes up many times in fictional books. What are they?
They are a group of people that, depending on what you believe, I guess, they certainly have a background both in some religion, but also the idea of science as knowledge. There's a bit of that when you look at the beginning of our country. Many of our founding fathers have been said to be Masons, such as George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, people like that. And again, I think you get that idea of the background of here's a group of people that, you know, just like other groups, they have secret handshakes and things like that. And just because of that, I think people see them as being kind of sinister in some ways, or at least having some kind of alternative plan as to, you know, here's the things we fund, here's the things that we talk about, but there's always something in the background that other people suspect.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Albert on the line. I'm sorry, we've got Andrew on the line.
Oh, yes, Dr. Dan. I would just like to make the point that not all of these conspiracy theorists are necessarily invalid or erroneous. I mean, any student of American history can kind of see certain patterns of, you know, federal or, you know, Machiavellian interference. I mean, the Lusitania was kind of questionable. The Gulf of Tonkin incident was completely fabricated. So, I mean, I think some individuals have kind of mental illnesses that they'll fixate upon, like, you know, UFOs and Roswell. But history has shown that individuals in power can act dubiously. And I wouldn't so quickly vilify or discredit any individual who's questioning any type of assertion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we just talked about investigative reporters, and, you know, we sure need them in our culture. Michael, do you have a reaction to what Andrew said?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. You always have to be on the lookout for these things. You know, people have to question their government and you know, people who hold power in one way or another. And like you said earlier in the show, Dan, the Watergate affair was, of course, a conspiracy. There have been many examples of conspiracies, but there's a tension here, and you have to be careful when you're investigating these theories, because they're very, once you get one into your head, it's really hard to dislodge it, because one of the properties that conspiracy theories have is that you can take anything that would usually constitute evidence against the conspiracy theory and discount it by saying that it's obviously just part of the conspiracy. And this is something that happens a lot, especially with medical conspiracies now. You see a lot of people talking about how the pharmaceutical industry is covering up the fact that, you know, vaccines cause autism and all these other various horrible disorders. And then whenever there's some study that comes out that says, well, no, they don't, then people say, well, you can't trust the doctors. They're all part of the conspiracy. So you have to be really careful not to sort of get sucked into it, because they have a way of kind of sealing themselves off from the rest of the world.
Let's go, Al. Can we go to Josh on line 3? Hey, Josh.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good. Actually, Andrew took a lot of the words right out of my mouth. I was going to mention the Gulf of Tonkin, but also earlier you were musing about how the power went out at the Super Bowl and how that might have been a conspiracy. And that made me recall, I believe it was in the 90s with the Enron scandal, some surreptitiously recorded phone calls were made public where senior Enron executives were telling their power engineers to shut down the power in California. So, you know, that was an example of high-level executives actually conspiring to shut down power that we now know is true. One other conspiracy I wanted to mention that stands out in my mind is during the first Gulf War, when a young nurse was presented in congressional hearings saying that the Iraqis were killing the infant babies over in Kuwait. And it later turned out that the girl who was giving the testimony was not an actual nurse, but the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador. And these hearings and this whole giant lie and conspiracy was set up apparently by Hill & Knowlton, a Washington, D.C. PR firm working on behalf of Kuwait. So I just wanted to mention those couple of things.
Yeah, big, big governments and big industries, yeah, some develop a mentality. And we know with many child abuse cases, they develop a mentality that, you know, we must survive, we must keep those out at all costs, at all costs. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it does pay to be mistrustful. Michael, we've got big conspiracy theories like end of the world on a certain date, and we've also got small ones like Barack Obama was not born in this country. But, you know, somehow reality rarely interferes with a good theory. I mentioned on the air before that somebody said to me, we're having a discussion, and I offered him some data, some hard research data, and he said, I wouldn't believe that even if it was true. Michael?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, people can make their minds up, and the risk here is like I said, that you can become convinced of whatever worldview that you might have, and you know, from there, just kind of cut yourself off from data. And that's not something that's unique to people who believe conspiracy theories. People who have, you know, other views can fall victim to this as well. People who have sort of mainstream political views. And it's really important, whether you believe in conspiracy theories or not, to just always be willing to prove yourself wrong. There's a horrible bias that people fall into, which we call confirmation bias, where you only look for evidence or pay attention to evidence that supports what you already believe. And if you want to be really sure about what's going on in the world, or you want to be a good, you know, citizen or a good investigative journalist or whatever, you always have to be willing and try to prove yourself wrong, because that's the only way that you're going to get to the truth.
Well, we do that beyond just conspiracy theories. I mean, even our worldview is simply a theory, and we tend to focus on data that supports our worldview.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's certainly not unique to conspiracy theories. It's a general human failing. But I think conspiracy theories can provide almost an easier way or a built-in way of discounting evidence by saying that it's a conspiracy. If you bring that into any other worldview, you're kind of making an additional assumption that there's a conspiracy at work. But when you're in a conspiracy theory, that assumption is already made, so it becomes a bit easier.
Huh. I wonder, Derek, if there's a relationship between societies where there's more education, more science education, and conspiracy theories versus less?
I think there definitely is. I think, if you consider yourself to be more educated, more, in touch with different cultures and societies, that you have a tendency, on one hand, to not believe as much in conspiracy theories, at least out loud. I think there is some indication that there are people who will not say it as much in public. And I know, like, when back in Villanova, if I talk to some of my colleagues about things, here's an interesting idea, here's a potential conspiracy, people will generally say, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Speaking of interesting, we're out of time. I want to thank both of you so much. It's been a great show. Derek Arnold is at Villanova. He's an expert on conspiracy theories. Michael Wood is at the University of Kent, and he studies conspiracy theories. And I want to give you another number now to call. It's 888-345-9499. We are in the thick of things with our winter pledge drive, and we are looking to you. We depend on you for some 50% of our programming here at WHYY. Please help us join the family, and if you're part of the family, renew your membership. We look to you, and we are so, so grateful for your listening and for your financial involvement. So show us that at 888-345-9499. I'm going to pass this over to Pledge Central.
Thank you, Dan. Great show today. Good work with everybody. I'm Jennifer Lynn, producer of Voices in the Family, with executive producer Mike and Scott. And staffing our phones are volunteers from HealthLink Medical Center, an impressive group. They would be even more impressive if they were receiving your phone calls right now, which they are. Thank you so much for those calls. But we need some more at 1-888-345-9499. I came up with my three I's rule today, Mike. And this intimate, intelligent, and important. You know, those three words to me really are about Voices in the Family, the things that we provide, the topics we provide every week. They are intimate. They bring you to a certain level with Dan. He can only speak to as a psychologist, as a radio professional. They are intelligent. We engage you. You call in. You are part of our community.